are just a few housekeeping items that I'd like to go over before I turn things over to our curator, Andrea Carnes, who I'm dressed like today. I don't know if you've noticed this.
Twinkies.
Twinkies. The first thing is, today until 1 p.m., you will be allowed to move through the Kehinde Wiley exhibition. And so that's a little bit of extra time. You'll have an hour on your own. We'll have guards up here. And then I understand tomorrow from 4 to 7, you're allowed to come and look at the show. We'll have guards. And the other thing is, photography is going to be allowed. So just keep that in your mind as you lead tours. If somebody whips out a cell phone, it's okay. Always without flash.
And
yeah.
No setting up tripods or anything like that. Just your phone.
Yeah. No photo shoots, no flash. But, you know, if someone wants to take a photograph, which they will, of much of this work, then it's completely okay. And with that, I will turn it over to Andrea Carnes, and we'll get started. Thank you.
Thanks, Erin. It's kind of appropriate that Erin and I are twins because Kehinde Wiley is a twin. And you'll notice, and his twin is not an artist, but you'll notice that when you walk through the exhibition, there are lots of pairings and twinnings of people. And I think that that is a recurrent theme because of him growing up as an identical twin. Even though the people you see in these works are not twins. Anyway, I'm Andrea Carnes. I know most of you, and I think you were probably expecting Kehinde today, and I'm very sorry, but he has a very bad cold and is resting until the dinner in his honor tonight. So were any of you, many of you, at the talk last night? Okay, good. Well, you were fortunate because I understand that, you know, we were full inside the auditorium, also in the cafe, and 200 people had to be turned away. So there were about 600 people here for the talk last night, and no one has seen the show yet. So this is a really good sign for things to come. So this exhibition was curated by Eugenie Tsai. She is the curator of contemporary art at the Brooklyn Museum. Eugenie, when we learned that she was doing the show, we jumped on it. Because most of you will remember, we all got to know and fell in love with Kehinde Wiley in 2008 when I organized a focus show with just three paintings of his work. So we knew then, I mean, our director and Michael Opping, our chief curator, and I all said to each other, we want him back on a grand scale. You know, a decade from now. Well, Eugenie beat us to it. So we were happy to take that exhibition. This is it. It's called Kehinde Wiley, A New Republic. I'm just going to take you through and tell you a few things about the bodies of work. And I want to start with this painting here. So I'm sort of the staff member in charge of this exhibition at our venue, especially because I had done a show with Kehinde before and had a relationship with him. He was, you know, not the rock star that he is today, then. So now, you know, things have changed a lot for him. He is almost like a rock star. He has people who have to take care of him and tell him what to do and where to be, and he's on a plane constantly, and that's part of the reason why he's sick now. But I wanted to start with one of his signature works, which is what he most often does, which is take a European masterwork, in this case, the Dutch artist Frans Hals, and replace the sitter in the original painting with a young black man who he calls it street casting. He basically approaches on the street in New York, in this case, and asks that person if they will model for his painting. So Frans Hals originally painted an aristocratic white man in Harlem, the Netherlands. And Wiley does the same thing, but finds a very powerful-looking man with a strong jawline on the streets of Harlem, New York. So he replaces the original white male sitter with a black male sitter. Sean John outfit, Timberland boots. So Wiley often refers to hip-hop culture and sort of urban street culture in his works. And he talked a lot last night, which I'd never heard him talk about before, about how quickly fashion decays and just falls away and changes. So he captures these moments, but they're always changing. But I think you'll see some very current trends within the exhibition as well. And he's very involved in the fashion world. So the point of him replacing the sitter is in part to point to omissions in the history of Western art and the history of Western civilization. So that's just something to keep in your mind as like this umbrella theme throughout the exhibition. Let's go on in. They're massive. Their scale is, I mean, they're insane. How are you? Good to see you. Congrats on selling your house in 2 seconds. Oh my gosh. My dad's still looking for a place.
Did he not?
No merchant. Start here. Is the speaker with us yet? Okay. I'll wait. Do we have a speaker? Okay. So I will start here with some of the earliest works in the exhibition, and I only want to say a few words about everything so that you guys can have some time to think and look and ask questions if you have them. This is one of the early works of Wiley before he really formulated his notion of street casting, you know, walking up to men on the streets who he felt some attraction to on some level in terms of putting them in his paintings. This he found crumpled up on the ground in Harlem, and it was a wanted poster for this man. And it's called Mugshot Study, but I think it actually was a wanted poster. And so he found it, he looked at it, there were all the man's stats and his infraction written on this piece of paper that Wiley found. And, you know, at the time he thought about what it means to be a black or brown or any person of color person and be male and how you're automatically profiled. And he didn't see a criminal when he looked at the image. He saw like this beautiful face. And so he wanted to redo it and kind of leave the numbers here from the police report, but also soften the man and make him look human and make him look more than human, idealized. So this was sort of the beginnings around this same time when he started to just approach men on the streets and then place them into paintings like the two equestrian works you see in this room that are sourced originally from European masterworks painted by white men of white men, but again, replacing the sitter. This work, he said last night, he said a couple of things about this work last night. One was that it was the last painting that he did in graduate school at Yale University. So it was kind of his like blessing to move on, like, all right, you're good to go. Final exam right here. But he also said that this is Martha Stewart's Seafoam Green. And I thought that was interesting because he talked a lot about how things in our lives are color-coded and we don't think of them that way, but they are socially color-coded. And he talked about, and I think he loves Martha Stewart and has used colors of hers for many years, but he talked about the orange tie and how often with fast food, the logos and insignias and everything from boxes to the front door to the branding of a fast food place is often in the red range. It's like oranges and yellows like McDonald's or or completely red. And he just kind of was saying that colors signal certain things to us. So he subtly uses some of those colors here that he thinks are very socially encoded. Or maybe he doesn't subtly use them, but it's subtle to us, you know, because they're things we're used to seeing. So this gallery is basically organized by the early works, and then it moves into the time when he started to do street casting on a regular basis. But it also includes, because it's equestrian, it doesn't exactly belong to the same series, but because it's equestrian, I thought it would be good to put this Michael Jackson portrait in the room with the other equestrian works. So this is one of the one and only works that Kehinde has done of someone famous. So, because the whole concept behind much of his work is finding people on the streets. But in this case, he, as he said last night, had struck up a relationship with Michael Jackson. They became friends. And this was done after Michael Jackson passed away, unfortunately. But Michael had eventually asked Kehinde if he would do a work with him in it. And he said last night that they talked about the notion of armor and how it keeps things out, but it also keeps things in, and that that was the way Michael had lived his whole life, so he liked the idea of being presented in armor. I'm going to just switch to that side of the room now, briefly. I just wanted to point out that in these equestrian portraits, and this is Napoleon crossing the Alps, David, the horses are, what he said last night is, the horses are small because that's the way they are in the original paintings. This one, the David painting, and the one in our collection, Colonel Platoff on his charger, by the original by James Ward, the British painter. How the horses are, but how, and I think, you know, most of us had noticed that the horses were small, but how they're also feminized. So there's this play between masculine and feminine. And, you know, Kehinde thinks that's also true of the original, this kind of wild mane. And he's accentuated some of those characteristics. But also, the frames themselves, and then the background in this one in particular, are also sexually charged in that there are sperm, little sperm within the image. And then the frame also has sperm. And he said last night, these sort of ovum forms as well. And then at the top, like he said, his head is popping out. It's a self-portrait. he talked about the sexuality that he finds in the original imagery as well as what he does now. And, you know, part of him approaching people on the streets has to do with an initial attraction on his part. And last night he said, and I'm sorry to keep paraphrasing him, but some of you weren't there, you know, that it's not like he says to people, hey, do you want to come up and see my etchings? There's no come on about it, but it is about an initial attraction. And then when he gets them to the studio, he takes photographs of them and uses those photographs to make the portraits. Because as he said, no one has the time to sit for a portrait that would take this long these days. The one in our collection here is the same way. The frame was painted with auto body paint. So you cannot see the sperm and the self-portrait quite as well in this one as you do in the other one, but it's all there if you look closely. He also talked about last night, and this was a revelation for me, I'd never heard him say this before either, how the scrolling background that he places into works like this that are not in the original also come to the foreground. So the idea there is that the background is usually invisible to most of us, or we think of it as not as important as what's in the foreground. And I think that also conceptually has to do, although he didn't say this, with bringing people of color to the fore in portraits such as this. So having that background come to the foreground, giving it a place of importance is part of what he does in even his early work like that one. I want to point out to you all that the bronzes in this exhibition are kind of a new endeavor for Wiley. These three in particular are based on originally female busts. So he's changed the sitters to all be men. And in the one in the middle, which is based on an African bust, he's placed this New Balance shoe on top of the head. So the idea there is, as is a recurrent theme throughout his work, that the largest export of America is its culture, right? So people all over the world, in Africa, in China, in Brazil, and the other places where he goes to create his works, he sees a lot of quote-unquote American goods. But we know that even though Nike or New Balance may market themselves as an American company, much of the work that is done for them is outsourced to China or to India, and then it comes back to us or goes to other places in the world, and people buy it who sometimes can barely afford to buy it because it's American to them. So a lot of his work, you know, comments on that as well. The camo, the Timberland boots, the things that you see in all of these, the shiny Nikes, again, have to do with how quickly what you see on the streets of New York changes, but also that notion of, you know, a different kind of posturing through fashion than a suit of armor. You know, this is today's kind of suit of armor to speak to masculinity. We're going to move into the next gallery. Yes. This is David's Napoleon. Oh, you mean for the background? You know what? I do, but I can't remember right now. It's let me. Maybe it'll come to me in a few minutes. But Eugenie said it earlier today. I'm sorry. Maybe Aaron remembers. Just, yeah. Yeah, right. Okay, well, we'll get that to you if we can. Let's move on to the next galleries. Oh, hey, I didn't even know you were still here. I snuck off.
You look familiar. We need a picture of all three.
I think I'm mostly going to talk about these works. We're going to talk about these works first. It doesn't matter where you go, Melinda, but just FYI. Okay, so we'll get started in this gallery now. We're not going to spend as much time everywhere as we did in the front gallery, but I wanted to talk about this a little bit. So these icons, you know, these are taken from saints, originally painted as saints, but again, Wiley replaces the saints, but kind of leaves their iconography and attributes within the works. So this is John the Baptist, or no, maybe this is John the Baptist with the staff. But uses, again, people from the world today to take the place. And he talked last night about this. Really, he was talking about the Memling altarpieces that we'll see in the back gallery, but it also applies to these. The intimate scale of these and how these are completely engrossing because of their scale, and you walk up to it and you're immersed in it. They're immersive. But these... these you really have to get up close to and study. And so he liked that play of scale and that switch of scale and thought of it when he was doing these works. He included on the Memling works that we'll see almost last was the first time he included the actual sitter's name on the works, but he did it again for this series. So he put the person's name here, the name of the person who's in the image. And he talked a little bit last night about the body as a canvas for fashion and et cetera, for, you know, decoration. And here you see this guy's completely tattooed. When you get up, I don't know if you can see it from back there, but when you get up close, you'll see the intricate tattoos that Kehinde included in this. And he holds Icons and Saints, which is probably the book that Wiley was using as a resource to create this series. I know it's a real book because I used it. Babette Bone made me buy it when I was at DCU. So I have that in my office. But you know, the idea that, like he talked about last night, he constantly flips through books of past art history. He's kind of obsessive about looking at them still today to find inspiration. I also thought he spoke beautifully last night, and I could never say it in the exact same way, about his own experience as a young man growing up in South Central LA with a single mom who was raising six children, and how they didn't have a penny, but his mom still would always scrape together some way for her children to get to be a part of things in sort of the world of more privileged children.
Was the school, the first school he went to, that she got him into, he traveled such a long distance, was that the art school at Huntington?
So he visited the Huntington as an 11 and 12-year-old boy, but he was not in art school there. I don't think it, the school was somewhere else. But that was the point I was going to make, is that his mother got him scholarships, he and his twin brother. And he said that his twin brother was better than he was initially, but his twin brother's in finance now. His mother got them scholarships. She got them into, he mentioned the Jewish Museum, but obviously they were the two scholarship kids because they were not Jewish and did not look like the other kids there. But he talked about having to get on a bus and go travel long distances to get to these places his mother would find for him, and how even then he thought about how people who are marginalized or, you know, lower income can just fade away into the cracks. They just fall away into the cracks. You don't know what their journey's like if you're not in their shoes. And I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, these paintings are, there's so much irony in all of them, but one of the ironies is that they're made for wealthy people. You know, they are a luxury item for extremely wealthy people, basically, his collector base and museums, and how, you know, that's part of the work as well.
I was just going to say, you might be thinking about, he went to Russia.
Yeah, he went to, for the CIA
museum,
or he got a scholarship somehow through the CIA is what it was. Wasn't that what he said?
Yeah.
So, right, so that too. But his mom was extremely industrious. She was on it, and she made it happen, and that, you know, he still loves her dearly. And she has family in Waco, so he's thinking that she may come here at some point to see the show. So this work is from his Down series, and he also talked about this last night and about how, you know, paintings exist that are not always these completely strong masculine representations of what it means to be male, and that some are more abject or I don't remember what word he used, but that's what I took from what he said. What?
Passive.
Well, yeah, they're definitely, thank you, Aaron. Yeah, they're definitely passive too. But with this series, they're also idealized and beautiful and, you know, with come hither eyes. And so, I don't know, I think they're...
They are historically based.
Yes, they're art historians. Yeah, this is Morpheus. This is based on sculpture. So that you also are seeing a translation of mediums with this work. And I think the catalog will have an image of the source, Randy. But he does leave like parts of the wood floor so that you see that it's just like a setup of a shot, and it's the same on the other side. But placing the man within the field of flowers, you know, this beautiful glowing skin, these eyes beckoning you, but then this field of flowers, which is also feminizing. So I don't know the answer to that, but he has assistants who often paint the backgrounds. He considers himself a portraitist, and he likes to do the figure. So other people have their hands on these canvases. And he talked about last night how he's very much, you know, that Renaissance model of a, like a Renaissance atelier where there's a master and then there are assistants, and they're all creating each parts of each work. So he uses that model, as many artists today do. But this one also has, you know, these moments in fashion. There's a Lego on the belt, millionaire club hat, and then the Puma tennis shoes. Each of these things, to me, are equally as fetishized as the figure. So now, I think there's too many of us to fit in the stained glass room, so should I just say something about it here and you guys can walk through after? Okay, so stained glass is his newest medium, and it's one of the oldest mediums, but he initially said to Eugenie Tsai from Brooklyn, I want to include some new work, and so she didn't even know what it would be, and when she found out it was stained glass, you know, she was excited by the prospect, but also cringed a little because, you know, it's not easy to travel and to move from venue to venue or to install anywhere. It was installed differently in Brooklyn than it is here. We put it in this room and made the room very chapel-like. It's painted green. The green color was picked by Kehinde, as was this burgundy and that navy or blue. Yes, by the artist. Sorry, I didn't hear the question. So the stained glass is made in Czechoslovakia, where he, you know, the place to go in the world to have stained glass made. He sends them digital images of what he wants, and then they send him the stained glass for approval or for fixing or whatever. But you know, the stained glass is in sections. Some of those are very large, and you can see the black frame that holds it. So they wouldn't be able to be shipped in solid sections, but also it's also more like they're in a chapel or church window because of that. And you'll see that more when you go in there. He talked about last night how a painting is lit from without, you know, and then the light bounces onto the painting and comes back to you. These are lit from within, and he liked that idea of lighting something from behind. Again, they show very current fashion. There's a pair of Adidas with the tag still on, and that is a reference to things needing to be fresh out of the box to retain their value. And there are also pins on some of the men. There's a donut pin on that man, and there's like an ampersand on another man. And those are some, and I'm sorry I don't remember the name, but it's a group, brothers who are in the fashion industry in New York who make those kinds of things. What's really interesting and kind of different about the stained glass when you go in, notice, is all the texture of everything, the fur, the sweaters, the pants, and just the juxtaposition of different clothes and different textures and how that all comes across in stained glass. So we'll move that way into the World Stage series.
the everything on the stained glass pictures.
And then set them in digital files. Okay, we're not going to stay in here very long, but go ahead.
Okay, guys, so this gallery is the first example in this exhibition of his work that is from the World Stage series. These are Dakar, so these are African men, and this side is India. And what Kehinde wanted to do was also to bring recognition of omissions in history, not just of African American men, but of all people of color, right? I mean, it's kind of an extension of what he first did with the street casting, but now he's gone to 7 or 8 different places across the globe. And they also refer to the global economy of American products, and sort of the different translations of that in different countries. But the main thread, again, is to place people, black and brown people, at the front and center of the subjects of his work. The backgrounds in these three African ones are like a Dutch wax background, and most of you who are familiar with our Yinka Shonabari work know that the history of batik and Dutch wax goods is complicated, and it's embroiled in the worst parts of colonialism. So, you know, it was originally taken and exploited from Indonesia. It's what, you know, it's known as Dutch, but taken to Africa to have refabricated, and the largest exporters of it are still England and Holland. So, you know, hints of colonialism here. I won't say more about that. These paintings are from India. This is the white slave painting, and he's replaced the woman in the harem with this contemporary Indian man with a Lakers shirt on. So we're going to move now into the next gallery.
Oh, good.
Want me to ask with this? Is this anybody recognize this?
They were sitting on the end of the bench.
Well, I'm just gonna give it to. Oh, Gail, good.
My brain is.
Hey, wait. Since it's yours, I'll take it back. Okay, so we're going to move on to the women, but I'll say a couple of things. This is also part of his World Stage series. The three works on this side of the room are from Israel and include one Palestinian man as well. And the works on this side of the room are from his World Stage Brazil. This is also like the Down series. You see the same passivity with the men here. It is part of the Down series. The catalog talks about this work, the couple, again, the twinning thing, you know, it's apparent in this one and of the one of Dakar in the other room here. But this work shows us a Palestinian and an Israeli man. And in Hebrew above, it's a phrase that I can't quote verbatim, but it basically means, can't we just get along? So, and, you know, the men are holding hands, And you don't really know if that's a friendship thing, if they're a couple, but we know that that's, you know, illegal in that part of the world, and it's the same with the African men in the other room. Or if they're just, you know, acquaintances who are shaking hands. But all of that is kind of left ambiguous.
What's illegal, the relationship or
being homosexual. Right. So if they were a couple, then that's not legal. Right. I asked Eugenie this morning about the background in this one because it's so intriguing, and just this image is just stunning to me. And so I wanted to know more about it. And she said that the background comes from a work that, I don't know the source exactly, but it comes from a work that's in the Jewish Museum in New York. So the iconography has to do with the original work. But it's things like that we recognize, but I just didn't know exactly what it was, and I still really don't, but you guys can research it. Yeah, I don't know what it refers to. We're going to move on, but I also wanted to just point out this young Brazilian man, because there's such a draw to this painting. For me, the minute it came out of his crate, I've looked at it so many times, and just the idea that, like many of Wiley's subjects, he's posturing just like they are. They're emulating what Kahinda showed them in art history books. But with him, just he's so young, and with his sideways glance, I mean, there's like a vulnerability to this guy, and there is to those guys too, but it's different, and it has to do with his age. It's like Renica Dykstra, like, capturing that awkward moment between childhood and adulthood, he's trying to emulate manhood, but you can see there's vulnerability there, and his beauty, like the slender physique, muscular slender physique, and that face. I mean, it's all youth. So we're gonna move into the women. Outsourced.
So he's given a digital.
I don't know. I don't know. It was done in Beijing. I don't know I don't know. He probably sent them a model.
Okay.
I would think not digital, but like a clay model.
So he does sculpt in clay of this to give to the people.
I don't. I can't really answer. I'm sorry. I don't
okay.
know. But I'll try to find out for you.
Because I know I'm going to be asked.
I'll try to find out for you. But
okay.
I know that it was done in Beijing at a foundry. But I have a feeling he oversaw the whole thing just like he does everything. Okay, so we're now into Kahinde's more recent body of work, which is portrayals of women. So this exhibition... What? Oh, sorry. I thought you couldn't hear me. But I'm yelling. well, there's a lot of people. But, okay. One of the newest bodies of work here. It's from a show that opened at his gallery in New York, Sean Kelly Gallery, called The Economy of Grace. And it obviously features women instead of men. That was one of the first works, I'm just going to point from here, that he made of a woman. And I think people had asked him for years, are you ever going to paint women? Are you ever going to paint white people? Are you ever going to, but conceptually his work has consistently been about one thing, and that's the black male placed in these, positions of power. But he did want to paint women. And so eventually he did. The woman there, you do not see her face. But it's still kind of the same kind of gesture about history. Like, she's moving forward and leaving us behind, and also leaving history behind. So it still has the same sort of message as the men. Eugenie acknowledged today and this morning, and I have also already heard this from several people, that the women don't seem to have the same sensuality that the men have. And so if you guys have picked up on that, I would say, you know, they're still really beautiful women. They are presented really strong and sometimes aggressive, like in this take on Judith and Holofernes. And Eugenie also acknowledged that a lot of people said to her, and we've heard it here too, that the head, Holofernes, is the only white person in the show. So, well, so the head is a woman. It's his now ex-studio assistant. But, I mean, he just needed a head, and she was there, you know. So that's how that went down. But, and the background is, what is the name? William Morris. I knew it was Morris. Morris and Company, William Morris wallpaper. Eugenie also said that they have some samples of that wallpaper in the Brooklyn Museum's collection, and that what she figured out was these are completely saturated, that the real water wallpaper, not water paper, the real wallpaper, you know, pales in comparison. So he's really sort of used his own creative mind. But she also said that, you know, the detail is almost exactly right. So this wallpaper is another obsession of his, and these decorative backgrounds. That's a Russian tapestry there. The hair in these images also plays a really big role. In these images of women. And these are, again, contemporary women, but this time not found on the street and used exactly in what they had on or whatever they wanted to wear. But he worked with Givenchy to create these gowns for these women. So the women are not able to afford this couture on their own. So he puts them in these designer dresses, but also leaves plenty of aspects of, you know, their real sense of fashion themselves. So you can see, like, the shoes. Somebody mentioned that last night in the lecture. The manicures. As we move, this is hard because there's a lot of us, but I'll take you to the last gallery of the World Stage Series, and then the very last gallery, it's a little small for all of us, but I guess I'll just talk about it before we walk in there, and then you can walk through. I should also just mention this bronze in the middle of the room. So the women's hair is all, you can't even really figure out logistically how it's exactly working, but the three women all have their hair tied together, you know, and I think what I was saying about hair playing a big role, you know, hair plays a big role for African-American women, and, you know, lots of time and money is spent on it. So the hair comes into play with all of these as well. So this was another new work, like the stained glass, that he said to Eugenie C., the curator, that he wanted to include, and he worked with a foundry in Beijing to make this bronze work, and then it was shipped from Beijing to Brooklyn. And the Brooklyn Museum bought it as a parting gift for their director, who was retiring. So it's now in the collection of the Brooklyn Museum. In the collection of the Brooklyn Museum. So I was just asked that, and I'm sorry, I don't know. I don't know if he made clay models or made models of some sort that the foundry worked with, and I don't know the process of these. But I can try to find out for you in the next, if I can talk to he or Eugenie in the next day, I'll find the answer for you. I can't remember. It's really heavy, but I don't remember if we fastened it or not. Chris is here, was here. Oh, here you are. If it's connected to the base. No.
But is the black triangle the base?
Yes.
He said that it's not connected, but it weighs 1,000 pounds. It won't move. Right, that's part of the piece. The base is the white thing. Okay, I think we're going to move on, and then you have a question? He didn't say anything about it, but I think you're on to something. I don't know what his exact thought was. Yeah, the hair is more artificial looking in some and more real and natural looking in others, but I don't know. I don't know what the thought was behind that. It may be the way the women wore their hair, who he asked to model. So, yes. Yeah. Right.
The polish.
Mm-hmm. He talked a lot last night, too, about the mastery of, he didn't talk a lot about this, but he mentioned it, the mastery of black and brown skin and how there aren't as many plastic materials and paints to work with to achieve it. And how he actually thinks he paints white skin better because he had to, or not better, but has done it so much more. He's had so much more practice at it. But you know, I think one of the first things you notice about this exhibition is how beautiful the skin is and luminous. So anyway, it was just another comment by him last night. No. It's just the way Brooklyn, wanted to, for the installation. Yes. Uh-huh, yeah, the same kind of, those dreadlocks have a similar, yes. So we're going to move on into the next gallery.
Oh my God, Ellen. It just like happened overnight.
Only those women are wearing that same leather belt. I mean,
yeah,
is that just by?
It's all the part of the dress.
So, okay. So yeah. They're just making good use of the accessory. It doesn't have any leather chains. Doesn't mean
for the works. Okay. It's part of a collaboration with Givenchy by Wiley.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did he ever find his father?
No.
No.
Economy.
Because he mentioned it.
Okay, so we're nearing the end here, sort of, but there's more work down the spine. I don't know. We'll see if we can figure out how to talk about that for a minute. Anyway, these works are, so the World Stage series that you saw of the Israeli men and also the Brazilian men and the African men, now this is World Stage. That's Economy of Grace is the name of that first series of women. This is part of his World Stage series, which now, by this point, includes women. In this case, women in Haiti and Jamaica. So that one's Haitian, and this one's Haitian, and the rest are Jamaican. In Haiti, there are sort of a lot of local beauty pageants, so, and you can win prize money and that sort of thing. So Wiley structured one of those beauty pageants in order to find these women, and so they participated in the beauty pageant, and then he asked them if he could also make a portrait of them, and it's the same for those women there. Again, you have the William Morris wallpaper background and this Jamaican trio, and also in this lone Jamaican woman on that wall. Another work that, you know, the juxtaposition between kind of a heroic, graceful painting of the past and the woman who's so strong and so,
showing her own badges through tattoos and jewelry and the torn up fishnet hose and the whole thing. I just think it's such an interesting work. And, you know, her face is so strong. Yes, Jamaican. This John the Baptist is also a young Jamaican girl, sort of similar for me to the youth in the other Brazilian image. You know, all of these people who Kehinde creates portraits of, he talked about last night how he pays them for letting him take their pictures and make their portraits. And he feels like that's an important thing to do. Most of them don't have a lot of money, just like he didn't as a young boy in South Central LA. But I think what comes across with the African men, these women, the women in that room, the Brazilian men, you know, these places are of extreme poverty, is, you know, still the femininity and the masculinity and the dignity of all the sitters. Yeah, it really comes across. Yes.
Are they in their self-selected clothes?
Yes. Yes. He didn't, but I talked to Eugenie about it. She thinks it's from, or her European curator at the Brooklyn Museum thinks it's from like a 19th century era. It looks like paint by number almost. I mean, it's a complete departure in a lot of ways, as is that one, the big one of the Indian man. You know, these two are kind of anomalies, but they're part of his bodies of work, and they should, you know, needed to be included in the exhibition. They are different. I don't know exactly. Oh, yeah. No, and it's just the background is more expressive, more painterly, less detailed than in the other works. So we will not all fit in the Memling altarpiece pieces together. It's in the next gallery. But it's another example of how we created a small chapel within the gallery space. And there's three works in there. And they are inspired by Hans Memling, who was an artist who was of a generation that helped define a new movement, which was to focus on wealthy and intellectual sitters. So Memling was of a moment where it moved from being royalty and clergy as the subject of portraiture to it being like wealthy merchants and intellectuals. So Wiley updates that yet again by using the everyday man on the street in those works. And they're small scale, like those icon, gold leaf icon paintings in the other room, so that you have to get really close with them. He talked about last night how he painted them on his lap with the tiniest brushes made, which is just an interesting notion, kind of that intimacy of making them and then how you look at them. They're so intimate to look at in that gallery. And I know we're talking about something you haven't seen. But do notice it's very subtle that they do have, in the wood frames that he had fabricated, they have the names of the actual people in the works, which that was the first time Wiley did that. The icons in the other room came after these. So this was the first time when he actually, you know, acknowledged the sitter. So moved away from the original work to make known, take away the anonymity of his sitter. So maybe we can just all walk through and meet in the very first gallery on the east side of the building where the video is of everyone smiling, and I'll just say a little bit about that and then we're finished. Just go ahead and wrap it up here and you guys can tell them what I said or not. I don't know. So this work is one of the earliest works in the exhibition, but I wanted to isolated since it's a video. So it's you know, it's kind of on your way out. It's kind of a bittersweet gesture on your way out. You get a smile. But the idea behind these, the video is called Smile from 2001. And the idea behind this work is that Kehinde asked people again through his process of street casting to come in and smile in front of the camera as long as they